you, Robert. The artist we have just heard in the Berg Violin Concerto is our guest today, and we are very privileged to have him on this program. It's hardly necessary to introduce Isaac Stern to our radio audience. He's been for over 20 years one of the best known and most highly regarded violinists of our time. Mr. Stern, in addition to your artistry as a violinist, we know you as a person of unusual eloquence and a great storehouse of ideas on the issues of music, economic and social, as well as artistic. And I have the great temptation, to which I'm going to succumb, of asking you simply, what's on your mind today?
Well, as this broadcast is being taped some 2 weeks ahead of its actual delivery, I, like everyone else, am curious of where we will stand as a nation some 3 weeks hence. May I say that I am not about to speak on politics in any way whatsoever, but it does affect, I think, to a degree, the quality of life in the United States, of which the arts are an integral part. I have been concerned in watching what's going on, how little is ever said, how little is ever thought, how little attention is paid to the quality of the mind, not the quantity of education, the quality of education. This is one of the greatest weaknesses I feel that we've had for so many years, and I see no alleviation of this weakness on any of the fronts we see haranguing us from side to side. I feel it particularly important now because of the new era of the orchestral musician. I was part, as were many others, of that group that spoke vociferously for years. By the way, let me put in a slight parenthesis here. You mentioned that I play the fiddle too, but that I have other interests, and now I'm just giving way to an apocryphal story about the two men walking down 57th Street, and one says to the other, you know, I heard Isaac Stern last night, and the other one says, really, what did he have to say? So here we are giving proof to that story. However, the thing I was about to say was about the orchestras. Now that many of the orchestras are reaching, or have reached, an all-year-round income, and a good income in the cases of the major orchestras, certainly an adequate one for a comfortable life, to live well, to educate children, and so on, the mistaken notion of having to earn all that by the associations and everything, I know the troubles that orchestras go into, but the amount of playing that I see major orchestras getting into bodes no good for the future of music, because music cannot be made well except by people completely, viscerally committed to the ardor of making music. It cannot be a number of services to which you go for a time in between, and as limited as possible in the perspiratory areas. And I cannot see music being made for more than, by any musician, for more than 30, 35 weeks a year.
You're concerned with the consumer service that
that's
becoming.
Right. And I find more and more that with the best will in the world, musicians are tending to begin to drift away from the idea of being orchestral musicians. The better ones want to make music and want to stay with music, and this is going to be a continuing problem. I would like to see some way. I don't know what the answer is. I know what the answer is. Certainly more money, the larger orchestras, so the men can have time off to refresh themselves. Not to moonlight, but to refresh themselves personally and artistically. Music cannot but be the total immersement of the performer. And I don't care whether it's the last stand of the celli or the soloist sitting up and standing up in front of the orchestra. They must be equally involved. There is nothing wrong with music, ever, except bad musicians. The power of music, the beauty of music, the necessity of music remains a constant throughout history. We have wonderful musicians. For those of us who are in music, and that's part of the art world on the whole, and that's part of civilization of our time, so everybody has a stake at one level or another. If we're concerned with our quality of life, we have to be concerned with the quality of our thinking, the quality of those who are given the right, given the privilege of being the transmitters of man's knowledge. We have to guard it. Well, and I hope we'll be guarding it in the future.
Goethe said once, I think the recognition of excellence is the mark of the educated man. And that is not quite so easy a skill to acquire, the recognition of excellence. Every man his own music critic, every woman to every person,
every person, I should say.
Mr. Stern, you were, of course, very much involved and instrumental in 1961 in saving Carnegie Hall, slated for demolition, and you have since served as president of the Carnegie Hall Corporation. So you come into contact constantly with the world's great performing artists and ensembles. You have spoken of the orchestral world. What's your assessment of the recital situation? Is the recital business endangered at the moment? We are a little bit afraid, and we wonder how you see that.
There are many factors to it. It's very hard to assess why recitals, on the whole, are in a declining period at this moment. There are only a few artists who continue to play as many recitals as they wish to do and so on, who can attract an audience. And yet, in part, I think, again, it's a question of quantity instead of quality. So many of the people who arrange concerts, let us say in universities, there's so many concerts today, and it is practically the backbone of the touring system, because the individual manager, for one reason or another, has almost gone out of existence in the United States, except for two or three, is always afraid to take a chance on a single artist. Everybody's accustomed to a great deal of noise, a great deal of activity, and you get more for your money the more people there are on stage that they seem to be saying. The fact is that when the artist comes along who has the ability to impose his will, to demand the attention of an audience, he will always be able to play a successful recital. He has to prove that point, however. The proliferation of orchestras, the lengthening of the seasons, has made it easier to be engaged as an orchestral soloist and not have to worry about the recitals. I know many of my young colleagues, wonderful artists, some of them youngsters I've known since they've been 10 years old, who will have jammed seasons of 80, 90, 100 concerts in the United States, for example, out of which there'll be barely 10 or 15 recitals. They don't even have the incentive, artistically or economically, to have the same pianist with whom they work year after year. My pianist has been with me for over 30 years. We've lived together throughout all our musical lives. We have made programs. We know what we've played in Australia, Japan, Soviet Union, everywhere that we've played.
Alexander Zakin,
exactly. And it becomes a unity in music. Now, I believe that the orchestras of this country owe something to music, the orchestral manager, the orchestral societies. I would like to see more orchestras present soloists in the course of the season on their subscription series. In the first place, they have a captive audience. In the second place, I am convinced that audiences would like to hear great artists play solo performances. In the third place, it would give a chance for the orchestra to take a rest once in a while, not to have services every single week. Mm-hmm. There are many advantages to it. It would also bring back the insistence that one has to listen to music. Music is, after all, the only form of the arts today in which the onlooker, the lay person, has to take an active part. You know, you can look at a painting. You can observe an opera, even. You can observe a ballet. You can look at sculpture. But in reading or in music, you yourself have to think. And certainly we have to get over the apathy of the average listener.
Listening as an activity rather than a passivity, so
absolutely.
To speak. Mr. Stern, you have only proved what I said at the outset, that you could talk for hours as well as play for hours, and we're sorry we only have a few minutes together. So we must unfortunately close. It's been our very great privilege to talk with Isaac Stern, the world-renowned violinist and musical statesman. Thank you so much for giving us this time on a very busy day of rehearsal and performance. And now back to Robert Conrad.